Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 117, recorded August 28th, 2013. Grammar Girl. Triangulation is brought to you by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription, sourcing their beans directly from the growers. Tonks roasts and ships within 24 hours to give you the freshest, bestest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/triangulation. That's tonx.org/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we interview the most interesting, smartest, most provocative people on the internet and have a lot of fun doing it. And we have an old friend here today, Grammar Girl, one of the earliest podcasters, Mignon Fogarty. I have known her since the Screensavers days. She started Grammar. When did you start? Hi, Mignon.
Hey, Leo.
Good to see you. When did you start Grammar Girl?
2006.
That, okay. It seems like longer for some reason.
Yeah, I did a science podcast before that because I was a science writer. But actually, I just had the 7-year anniversary of Grammar Girl.
That's so good. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And are you a grammarian? Is that your, you said you were a science person? Are you a librarian? What is your training for this? How dare you tell me grammar?
Well, when I started, that kind of was the case. I had an undergraduate degree in English, and I was a working writer and editor. And when I started, I didn't really know much more than an average writer and editor. But, you know, it was trial by fire, and I went out and bought 20 reference books the first month I was doing it. And I've been studying up ever since. And all my podcasts are highly referenced and researched. So, you know, and now 7 years after starting, I feel like I kind of do know my stuff now. So
better. But grammar is one of those funny things. There's certain areas where everybody thinks they're an expert, and grammar is one of them. And I've never seen more bitter, vicious fights over grammar principles. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, it surprised me at first. I didn't really know what I was getting into, actually. And that was sort of what prompted me to start doing tons and tons of research for every one of my shows, because people disagree so much. And I wanted to be sure I was giving the best information and not just my opinion.
What's the most controversial grammar rule?
Oh, a lot of people think you shouldn't end a sentence with a preposition. But there is no real rule against it. It was made up by writers in the 18th century. And
it's a terrible
rule
because it ends up with all these complicated constructions that you're, you know, doing cartwheels to try not to put a preposition of the sentence at which it will be ending to which of that.
Exactly. That is something up with which I will not put.
Up with which I will not put. It's okay to say put up with.
It is. It's not a real rule. The problem is a lot of people think it's a real rule. So although I tell people it's not a real rule, then I have to say, but so many people think it is, you really should try to avoid it when you can. But don't make your sentences painfully awkward if that's what it takes. Just end it with a sentence, with a preposition.
Yeah, because up with which I will not put. There's a famous joke about that, isn't there?
There is, with somewhat colorful
it's
language.
It's a colorful joke about it's a girl meeting her college roommate for the first time. Is that it?
There are a ton of variations. So, there's something – one I commonly hear is at a restaurant. So the waitress will say, where are you from? And the person will say, we're from somewhere. We don't end sentences with prepositions. And she says, oh, where are you from, jerk?
Only a little more colorfully.
Yeah.
It's actually a great joke.
It is.
Okay, so we can now stop – doing convoluted sentences to get rid of our preps at the end. That's good.
Of course, if you don't know what a preposition is, this is completely a meaningless conversation. And that's where, and I want to give you a plug right up front, Grammar Girl's new app will be very handy. I'm not very good at it. I thought I was. I thought I was super smart. If you've been listening to the Grammar Girl podcast for the last 7 years, you probably do better than I did. Grammar Pop is the name of it. Just came out last week on the iOS store. You don't have an Android version yet, right?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
I'm going to go back to an easier level. I'm at the top level, and I'm not going to do that. So the idea is kind of like Angry Birds for grammar. I could see, a fifth grader, sixth grader, fourth grader, something like that?
Yeah, definitely. 9 to 11-year-olds are, I hear a lot that parents are playing it with their kids. But the parents like the higher levels. They do. Especially people who love word games,
It's challenging. We'll start with the early on level. So you pick a part of speech. In this case, I'll pick a noun, and madness is a noun. The is an article. So you're simply picking verb, noun, articles.
Don't stop.
Oh, by the way, that sounds just like Grammar Girl. Look, there she is. It's nice to have a caricature of yourself that is you. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it was great for the game.
Yeah, and it's your voice in the game, right?
Yeah. I recorded them just sort of as placeholders, but then everyone liked them.
What, they were going to hire professional voice talent? You're a professional now. Dog is a noun. Barked is a verb. Okay, so everybody,
level
this
complete.
Would be good. Look at that. I got points. I got coins. I'm good. I'm a professor. Awesome.
Good job, professor.
That's Grammar Girl saying that, not in real life on the game. It confused me because I have Grammar Girl on the show. And I thought she said to me, good job, professor. I thought, are you being sarcastic, jerk? So let me go to the hard one just for you cocky people who think this is really easy. So you can play at any level without a timer. And there are 28 levels. Should we do an advanced level?
Yes.
This is the top level. So you'll see it's a little bit more complicated. There's, 12 different words here. Jonathan only gave Danielle the compliments so he could get her to stay. Well, I'll do the nouns because that's easy. Jonathan, Danielle, compliment. Okay, that's that. Now, let's see. Verbs, that's easy. Gave and... to stay is not a verb. It's an infinitive.
Right.
Okay, because it has two in it. Okay.
Yeah, infinitives are kind of easy in the game because they're always two words.
They always begin with two. Pronouns, yeah. That's pretty easy. He and her... Right. We got an article in there. That's the. Now it gets hard. So these are the parts of the language it could be. Only. It's like only. An adverb, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So.
It's a conjunction.
Shh.
Sorry.
Yeah, I knew that. It's a conjunction. Conjunction, junction.
It's like trying to watch someone else drive. No, go left.
Could. What is could? All right, I'm going to give you the chat room your chance. Don't say anything, Mignon. Chat room, what part of the English language is could? This is called Grammar Pop. I'm playing the HD version. You say a verb? Let's try it. We're going to put it on. Richard Yass says a verb. It is a verb. Congratulations. How about get? That might be a verb too, right? Let's try it. It is. We did it. You must be a professor. Anyway, that is harder than it looks. Much harder. But if you play through the whole thing, it would be. So this is obviously an education game for students.
It is. Although I consider it a word game. I mean, I made it as a word game because it was the kind of game I would want to play, and it didn't exist. But I am finding that the majority of the people, at least who are writing to me and saying they really love it, are either teachers or parents who are homeschooling their kids or want their kids to get extra practice.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to definitely use it with Lisa's son, Michael. He would get a lot out of this. And I one thing I notice about kids that age is they are always on, if it's hard to get them to do homework because they have all these compelling screens they can go to, not just TV, but the computer, the iPad. And he loves it, and he'll spend a lot of time with it. So I think it's probably a good idea to start putting some, educational games in front of him because he'll do it, but he'll learn something at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I've been all about making grammar fun, starting with the podcast,
right,
and doing other things, and games were just a really obvious thing to do next.
So Grammar Girl started in 2006, and you've done, by now, you've probably done... How many episodes? Hundreds? Thousands?
About 380.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And then you branched out. What was the next one?
Books. Books were the next thing. I have 7 books out now. Seven books in 6 years. Yeah, I've been busy.
Jiminy Christmas.
And the first one, it was a New York Times bestseller, which I credit largely to my podcast audience. You know, that was really exciting. And the website has become a huge part of our business.
QuickAndDirtyTips.com?
Right, QuickAndDirtyTips.com.
Because that became your brand, Quick and Dirty, huh?
Right, because I founded the whole Quick and Dirty Tips podcast network. Right. And then I partnered with Macmillan to help it grow. And they've done 2 big website updates. We just finished a huge website update, actually, a month ago. And because the web has become as big a part of our business as the podcast.
Look how many shows you have. You have productivity, relationships, pets, tech, health and fitness, education, business and career, money and finance. You got Money Girl. You got House and Home, the domestic CEO, Amanda Thomas, is your featured host there. Mighty Mommy, Cheryl Butler. How many hosts? How many shows? You've really grown this.
We have about 15. And, it's, you know, the website just does huge traffic.
That's awesome.
And, you know, the thing I think that your audience in particular might be interested in is that I actually made Grammar Pop myself. I don't have any programming experience, but I used a tool called Game Salad.
I didn't know that, really?
Yeah, it's a drag and drop game development tool. And, like, you know, I've wanted to make a game for a long time. And, you know, I got quotes and they were really expensive. And there you go, yeah. And Game Salad, you need to understand the logic of making a game, you know, how to say, when the player hits that word and it's a noun, give them 10 points. But you don't need to learn where to put the semicolons and, you know, where the line breaks have to happen and whether you can use capitals or lowercase. You don't have to learn a programming language. And that made it doable for me. I had tried to teach myself Objective-C to make apps, and it was beyond me. Yeah, it was, like, completely beyond me.
Wow.
But then I found Game Salad, and I knew I could do it. It took a year. Half that time was just writing all the sentences, though, because there are more than 14,000 words in the game, and they're all categorized by their part of speech. So that was half the time. But yeah, and it's amazing. And and you were asking if there's an Android version, and I'm working on it, and it should be out pretty quickly, because with Game Salad, you make it in their tool, and then you almost like exporting a Word document to, you know, Word or PDF. You export your game to either iPad or Android or Mac desktop. So the code doesn't have to change to make it an Android app. I need to work with the sizes so it fits all the different screen sizes for Android, and that'll take some time, but not as much time as it would make if I had programmed it for the iPad and then had to reprogram it for the Android using a different language or system.
I'm impressed. I mean, you could have said to Macmillan, hey, go ahead and do this. But you did it. You did it on your own. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Wow. It's sort of a demonstration project.
You think you'll be doing more?
Yeah. Now that Grammar Pop's doing really well.
Is it? Oh, great.
Yeah. So now that it's, you know, since that one is doing so well, I can do more, and I have ideas, and I'm not sure yet whether I'll do it myself or maybe hire someone and manage them, but even if I hire someone and manage them, I'll be a better manager because I understand what they're doing. You know, before I wouldn't have understood if what I was asking for was easy or hard. And now I know because I've done it myself.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting that Grammar Girl started to learn programming languages, which, you know, they have syntax too, and it's much stricter than English language grammar.
Yeah, no, it definitely is.
I mean, it's related.
It is. You know, it's all about the rules, right? And with English, there are gray areas. With coding, not so much.
No. But there are verbs. There are nouns. There are modifiers. Mm-hmm. Come to think of it, it's kind of like, I mean, but that's the whole point of programming languages, is they're supposed to be a little bit like English so you can understand them a little bit better.
Yeah.
That's neat. I'm surprised you had a hard time with it. I thought you'd pick it up right away.
Yeah, objective. Well, you know, I was trying to teach myself, and I think if I found maybe a better online course or something, but just the materials I found weren't helpful. And the cool thing about Game Salad is they have this amazing community. It reminds me of when podcasting first began back in 2006. You know how we'd go to the podcast pickle and we'd all help each other with the tech stuff?
Well, Podcast Pickle, I forgot about them.
They were so helpful, the people on those forums.
Yeah.
And Game Salad has fantastic forums where people are helpful. So if I got stuck, I could go ask a question and someone would help me. And they have a lot of users who have made how-to videos. So almost like Grammar Girl, you know, I'm a 5-minute quick tip on language. There are hundreds of 5-minute quick tips videos on how to do something in Game Salad. So there's, you know, a 5-minute video, how to make a timer. There's another 5-minute video. You know, how to slide left and right and make the game move. So, you know, you can watch all these tutorials and follow along and try your own little bits and pieces. And it made it really easy to learn.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about podcasting, the history of podcasting. You kind of brought that up, Podcast Pickle. That's a blast from the past. And choices that you made along the way with the Quick and Dirty Tips podcast. It's become a very successful network. Did you sell it to Macmillan, or are they partnering with you? I know they're associated with this.
Right. We're partners. So
partners.
I sold them a share of the business.
Smart woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you kept a part of it for yourself.
I did, and it how much I have depends on when the show launched. So if I had already created the show before the partnership, I get more of it than if they created the show after
later.
The partnership.
But you get a little piece of their stuff, too.
Yeah, and we still, I mean, I talk to them every day. They handle the day-to-day operations, which had become far too big a job for just one person. And that was one of the reasons I partnered with them. But I'm still actively involved in everything that's going on.
Somebody asked me, there's a new social media tool called Buffer, and they had asked me, they said, we're highlighting different entrepreneurs, and what was your biggest challenge as an entrepreneur, and could you write us a couple of sentences on that? And I said, and it was very easy, and it was exactly what you ran up against, which is, I knew how to make shows, I knew how to do content, I even knew a lot about how to stream and, you know, all of that stuff. I knew nothing about business, about how to hire people, how to manage people, how to make money, how to sell advertising, none of that stuff. So the smartest thing I did, and it sounds like for you too, was to get somebody to do that for me so I could focus on the thing I like to do and want to do, which is create content.
Yeah, I discovered that I'm a very bad manager.
Yeah, terrible.
Really
as my,
bad.
As my employees will testify. Lisa, who runs the company now, says, don't talk to Leo about anything. Just talk to me. And she says, now, you're not supposed to talk money with any of them, okay? I say, oh, yeah, right. I don't know anything about that. Hey, speaking of money, let's go. We're taking a little bit of a break. We're talking to Grammar Girl. It's mignon. Is that right? Am I saying it right?
Mignon.
Mignon. Not filet mignon. Filet mignon.
Not minion
either.
My family calls me minion.
Really?
Yeah, this is like my little girl name.
But you're nobody's minion, that's for sure. She is the Grammar Girl herself, and it's so great to have her on. One of the early pioneers in podcasting, who's clearly done quite well for herself. But first, a word from our fine Tunks coffee growers, our bean roasters. If you love a good cup of coffee, and I do, and you're interested in exploring, or you know somebody who is, I have to remember recommend Tonks, T-O-N-X, not .com, but it's .org, okay? Tonks.org. Maybe they have the .org because they really set themselves up as a mission to educate people about great coffee, and their timing couldn't be better because all of us now have kind of experienced better coffee than the Maxwell's House passed through the percolator, and we're kind of interested in all of this. Tonks is taking it to the next level. They source the beans themselves from individual farms all over the world. They follow the sun to find the best, freshest beans, ship them to their roastery where they roast them and get them to you within 24 hours for the freshest, most delicious beans. And it's a great education because you see on every bag exactly what the farm is that bean came from, what country, what style of bean it is. You can make coffee that's better than anything you've ever had in your life. They even have tips on grinding it and brewing it. You can use a Chemex or a drip filter. I use an AeroPress, which I think to me is the best and easiest way to make a cup of coffee. And it brings out all the amazing flavors. Home-brewed coffee, just as good, if in fact, I think better than your favorite cafe. It's easy, but it's got to start with the best beans. That's why I want you to go right now to tonx.org/triangulation. And you can try it for free. You get your first beans free. Just a little sample so you can see what it's like. They have bi-weekly subscriptions. So every other week you're going to get a delicious bag of beans from Tonks. They ship them fast, so they're brand. They're not hot. They're not still warm from the roaster, but about as close as you can get. They literally follow the tilt of the earth to get the right beans at the peak of their perfection. Now, if you're not into coffee, but you know somebody who is, it's also a great gift. The gift, as they say, that keeps on giving. Much more meaningful than a greeting card. tonx.org/triangulation. Get your first beans free from Tonks. So where are you located, Mignon?
I'm in Reno, Nevada. And right now, we're getting horrible smoke from the big wildfire in California.
Oh, that's right.
Awful.
The Yosemite fire, terrible, terrible thing. So is that where you've always been in Reno?
No, I spent many years in Santa Cruz, California. Which
Me
is still
too.
Did you?
Did I ever make out with you? Because I made out with a lot of girls in Santa Cruz, and I don't remember much of it at all.
I don't think so.
Okay, just checking. Did you ever go to the Catalyst? Never mind, no. I'm way too old. When were you in Santa Cruz?
Oh, gosh, now it's probably been 15 years ago.
I went to Santa Cruz High in 1973. I graduated.
Oh, okay. My husband was a graduate student.
You weren't even born. He was at UCSC.
Yeah, my husband was a grad student at UCSC. So we lived there for 5 or 6 years while he was getting his PhD. And I love the Crow's Nest. That's my favorite.
The Crow's Nest, baby. View of the bay, great steaks, wonderful food. Love the Crow's. That's in Capitola, though, right?
No, it's in Santa Cruz.
Is it in Santa Cruz proper?
It's at the bottom of the 7th by the harbor. And the bar upstairs has great specials, happy hour food specials. And you can sit there and watch the sea lions. It
sounds like you miss Santa Cruz.
I do, especially right now with all this smoke. But Reno's awesome because I love to ski. And we're 35 minutes from North Star.
But you really went there for the taxes, right? No income tax.
It was alluring, the no state income tax.
Really? Interesting. Yeah.
But my sister lives here. And we had moved in between. We moved to Arizona, and I wanted to get back to the West Coast. So.
Well, it's the nice thing about podcasting. It doesn't really matter where you are. You can do it anywhere. I mean, here we are in Petaluma, nowhere near the center of the world, but we get thanks to Skype and so forth. So you started with a Grammar Girl, and your next one was a Quick and Dirty Tips.
Grammar Girl was the founding podcast of the Quick and Dirty Tips Network. And then we had Modern Manners Guy.
That's right.
And the Mighty Mommy and Legal Lad and Money Girl. Those were the early shows.
Money Girl. And you got people to do those. You just stuck with the grammar thing.
Right. Yeah. In fact, the early podcasters, those were all basically just my friends who I thought would be good podcasters.
Me too. Steve Gibson, Paul Theroux, they were just my friends. Amber MacArthur, you want to do a show? And they would like, what do you mean? I don't care. Sure. Once a week, how long could this last?
Right. And you know what a grind it is doing a show every week. So none of those early people are still hosting those shows, which is one advantage, actually, of having it be an avatar and a name like Grammar Girl or Money Girl. You can easily bring in a new host if someone wants to leave, and it's not so jarring as if the show were named after an actual person.
Well, I also like the character. The characters are fun. Yeah.
And especially like for grammar, people are so intimidated that having a friendly little cartoon character is a good thing.
Are you willing to take some grammar? Okay, we'll do one more. You want me to do one more? All right, one more. Gerund. I've always wondered what the hell is in Latin. You know, Latin is a useful language to study for grammar because they have things like the subjunctive and the gerundative. And I dimly remember gerunds. I don't think there's any gerunds in here, are there?
No, there aren't.
No, and participles, that's a tough one too for me.
There's a lot of extra help on telling a participle from a gerund. There's a link, there's help in the game.
That's nice.
There's a link to even more help because that's the trickiest part of the whole game.
gerunds and participles.
Yeah.
I could have gone through life without knowing such things existed. Why does anybody need to know what a gerund is?
Well, it's a really good question, actually. You learn it in school, but someone asked me, will Grammar Pop make me a better writer? And I had to say, no, it won't.
It just slows you down.
It'll help you learn the different parts of speech, which right. is a fun thing to know. But, and I guess, you know, if you're writing, it can help you. It can help you avoid having a dangling participle right. and things like that. But it isn't an essential skill to be a good writer. It's just something that we learn.
And it may be because I'm an old-fashioned kind of person, but I judge people. I'm bad. I'm really bad. I'll admit it. When I hear bad grammar or obviously bad grammar, I make an assumption about somebody's education level or maybe not their intelligence so much, but, you know, you kind of it has some impact on it. When I hear somebody say between you and I, for instance, mm-hmm. it drives me crazy. Now, that's dumb. Because the communication is perfectly clear.
Yeah, it drives a lot of people crazy, though. It's a common complaint. You know, hearing people say, send the memo to myself.
Oh, I hate that.
It drives people crazy. And we've learned these rules. And, you know, linguists would argue that that's how people use language and communication is clear. So there's no problem with it.
It evolves. There is no standard. It's an evolving standard.
Right. But it bothers a lot of people, and even if it's not fair, people do judge you by how you use your language. So there have been studies done that show that people think other people who have a Southern accent, people think they're
right.
less smart
right.
than people who don't have a Southern accent. And it's not fair and it's not true, but it's the reality of the world we live in. So
right.
if you want to succeed, it's important to use certain kinds of language.
Right. So is it I shouldn't send a memo to myself?
You would send a memo to yourself.
Yeah.
But if you're telling Lisa.
Because that's reflexive
yes.
property.
Good.
So I'm sending it to myself. But if Lisa's sending a memo to me, it's not Lisa sending a memo to myself. It's
right.
not reflexive.
Most people don't know that. That's really good.
It's Latin. Latin got in there, I tell you. I wish they still taught Latin in school. That's how an old fart I am. Do you have pet peeves, or have you learned as language has evolved not to care so much about this?
It's hard for me to care so much,
yeah.
partly because
you're not a grammar Nazi. You're a grammar girl.
And I see how many mistakes there are to make. You know, the reference books I use, one of them is 800 pages long. No, nobody's going to remember every one of those rules. But, you know, there are certain things that still annoy me. Like, it annoys me in business writing when people capitalize words that don't need
randomly.
To be capitalized.
Just randomly.
Randomly.
Yeah.
Like,
random
this
capitalization.
Word's important. I'll capitalize it.
That drives me crazy. It's not that you're not writing that, but remember the Declaration of Independence where nouns are capitalized.
Yes. Most people don't know that either. Leo, you're amazing.
Times have changed.
They have. Back when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, the style was to capitalize all the nouns in English. So all the nouns in the Declaration are capitalized. But we don't do it that way anymore.
It's kooky.
Yeah.
So really, when you're talking grammar, you're talking about just a moment in time. And this is how it is today. And well, ain't is a good example where when I was growing up, it was considered really uneducated to use the word ain't. And now it's used often and probably properly in a lot of written language because it says something. It has a communication when you use the word ain't. It's stronger than I'm not. I ain't gonna do that.
Folksy. Yeah. It's also fun to look back in time and see the words that people objected to hundreds of years ago. Like there were people who thought the word celebrate was an outrageous abomination. Celebrate was you know, the way we would think of irregardless today, people used
what?
To think of celebrate. So.
What? But irregardless is wrong. Celebrate is a party.
I know. Someone made it up. And it's funny to go back and look at these words that used to be considered horrible that we now. Lengthy is another one.
Really?
People thought lengthy was a horrible word that nobody should use.
Well, now that you say it, it is a terrible word, lengthy. Nobody should say lengthy.
Yeah, I mean, long is better. You know, if he had, yeah. he had a lengthy hospital stay,
it's
why
a
not
long
just say
one. Yeah,
long,
yeah.
But
actually, I agree. I hate lengthy. Don't use lengthy. There are a lot of words that like that that people think that their language is better because they've used a more complicated word where a simpler one would do.
Right, conversate yeah. came about that way. You know, just say talk. We talked.
We conversated. Well, I'm a big Strunk and White fan. See, to me, that's – and I think that little thin book is all the grammar you really need to know is in that little thin – forget the 800 pages.
It's an odd little book, though. Like Strunk and White, they advise against using the word clever. Like,
really?
That's a – yeah, it's a weird thing in the book. And there's not a single thing in that book about question marks. I reread it about a year ago, and I ended up just sort of shaking my head.
Well, it's self-evident. You use a question mark when there's a question, right?
Right. Should be self-evident. Does it go inside or outside the quotation mark?
So I have Fowler's Guide to the English Language.
That was the first one I got, actually. That's a great book. It tends to be more British. It's
pretty old-fashioned, too.
Yeah. My current favorite is Garner's Modern American Usage. It's sort of the newer American version of Fowler's, and that's the one. That's the one that's about 800 pages.
I'll have to get Garner. Yeah, yeah. Fowler's. I mean, he wrote it in 1926.
Yeah, it's and it's been updated.
It's kind of antiquated.
Yeah,
I love having it.
These books are controversial. So, you know, Webster's Third was a big dictionary update, and people were outraged.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't like the things that were involved. The editors got death threats. I think the person who updated Fowler's got death threats. It's
you
crazy.
Can't change that.
it's not
clever enough.
It's not this staid, dusty, safe job you think it is.
Oh, I know. You know what? Even in our business, this is an issue. And I'll give you an example. Maybe you had to deal with it at quickanddirtytips.com. Title capitalization. So there's the AP style guide. There's all these different style guides. And how you capitalize titles of podcasts. Am I wrong, John? Have we not had heated debates?
Yes.
And when I first started doing this, I just said, just capitalize every word because the true rules are so insanely complicated that none of our editors will ever do it right.
Yeah, you're right. And it's a style choice, so you can capitalize every word and say, this is our style.
Right.
This is how we do it. It's perfectly fine to have a house style. That has been one of the hardest things for me to let go of with the Macmillan partnership. There's an editor for the site now who isn't me, and I don't make the style choices. And one of the things, you know, they don't put a hyphen in email, and I prefer the hyphen. So I put it in all my stuff, and I think they let it slide. But
I love hyphens. That's one of the things Strunk and White said. There's nothing stronger than an M dash. Put that hyphen in there. Use that. They love that. So let me read to you from Grammar Girl herself. On capitalizing titles. Now, we use what is called, what you call the MTV style.
Did I call it that?
Which gives you an idea of how literate it is, which is just to capitalize every word because it's too complicated otherwise. This is the actual rule. Capitalize the first word of the title, the last word of the title, in all nouns, pronouns, verbs, adverbs, adjectives, subordinating conjunctions, and this is where it gets complicated, a few but not all conjunctions. Prepositions are only capitalized if they're used adjectively or adverbially. For example, you'd capitalize the word up in the title Squiggly looked up a word, but not in a title that said Squiggly walked up the mountain. That's the Chicago Manual of Style. That's crazy.
It is crazy. It is. Yeah. Yeah.
So here's the AP style. No, I'm not going to read it. It's just nuts. So we use the MTV style.
Everyone will tune out if you start reading these things. Like, well,
did you have to debate that? What do you use for your podcast titles?
We use a modified Chicago style. So I believe we capitalize any preposition that's four letters or longer. Any word that's four words or longer.
Ah, that's simple.
Yeah.
The editors are smart enough to figure that out. No?
There are actually websites where you can plug in your title and then click a button and it'll spit it out in a bunch of different title formats.
Computers to the rescue. What is the link? Do you know the link?
I don't off the top of my head.
There's a thing called Google, John. I'll find it for you. But you say in this article on quickanddirtytips.com, the most important thing about title capitalization is to be consistent. And that is really awesome. What was always our goal here is, well, we're going to figure out how we do it and we're just going to do it that way.
That is often my advice. Yeah. Just be pick away and be consistent, which is actually what I'm not doing by hyphenating email when everyone else on the site doesn't. But it drives me crazy, so I have to do it.
So I read somewhere that the natural progression, evolution of language is from they start with two words. I'm trying to think of an example, but it starts with two words. Then the two words become hyphenated. And as the language evolves, the hyphen drops out and the word becomes deleted. And then that's the word.
Generally, that's true. Although when you look at dictionaries adding and removing words, well, first of all, different dictionaries will show words hyphenated or not hyphenated or pushed together.
There's no agreement. But that's because it depends where in the evolution you're picking.
But even even current modern dictionaries might disagree. And then if you look at words that they take the hyphens out or put the hyphens in, it varies. And sometimes they'll take a word that has been joined and they'll put the hyphen back in on occasion. So in general, it goes from hyphenated to closed.
Whose standard is E-mail?
I believe Chicago still supports it. So AP got rid of the hyphen, and then I was at that meeting for the American Copy Editor Society, and like everyone raised their hand, like, what's going on here? And
Wait a minute. There's a meeting. Is it a yearly meeting of the American Copywriters Association?
Yeah, it's fun.
That sounds great.
Fun people.
I bet there's fist fights in the hallways.
I never saw a fist fight, but people do, you know, they get upset about things and have animated discussions.
Animated. That's a good word. Is email capitalized or lower? Is it lowercase e?
It's lowercase.
It's always lowercase.
I mean, unless it's at the beginning of a headline.
Right.
Yeah.
But an E-mail is Chicago, but email is more modern.
Is Associated Press.
Fist fight's a good example. Thank you. In our chat room, US DeWiz said, fist fight. It was two words, then it was hyphenated, then it became a word.
Yeah, yep.
But you're right. Sometimes it goes backwards.
Yeah, I would have to look at different dictionaries and see if they're all the same.
Why is it people love language? There's something about, and it's not all of us, believe me, but there are a few of us, like you and me, who really are fascinated by this. And actually, probably there are people watching going, what do you even care about this?
I think it says a lot about our culture. You know, our language is part of our culture.
Language is culture. You're right.
Yeah. And in how we use language says a lot about you and where you're from and what your social class is. You know, I mean, I'm from Seattle originally, so I tend to say you guys when I'm addressing a group of people, whereas people from the South will say y'all.
Y'all.
And people in the Northeast might say yous or yins.
Not to be confused with Utes. That's another one entirely.
So these dialects all over our country and all over the world are fascinating. You know, what they're doing with English in India, there's a whole different kind of English spoken in India. You know, they'll prepone a meeting instead of postponing it. I forget what it means now. Maybe someone in the chat room knows, but they do say we're going to prepone that meeting instead of postpone the meeting.
Indian to bring forward to an earlier time, and that makes sense because Latin, it's Latin. Pre is before and post is after. So postpone would be after the fact, to make a meeting after the fact. But if you move a meeting up, you're preponing it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are just all these fascinating little quirks that are happening all the time with
But that's
English.
Only used in India. How interesting.
Yeah, it's. I think it's fascinating. In the history, looking at what irritated people 200 years ago, and it makes it harder to be irritated about things today when you see how ridiculous people from 200 years ago sounded when they were complaining about lengthy and celebrate. You know, it makes it a lot harder to be outraged about things today.
Is it GIF or GIF?
I say GIF.
Me too.
Yeah.
This will literally, now there'll be a battle in the chat room.
Literally. That was a big deal a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, because the guy who invented it decided that he was going to call it GIF, even though it's obviously GIF.
Right, exactly. Obviously. How could you call it anything else?
That's another good one, which I just did, which is literally versus figuratively. People do that wrong all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And people were outraged a week or two ago because someone discovered that the figuratively definition of literally is in the dictionary. And there was a huge kerfuffle on
No,
Reddit.
Really?
Yeah, oh, it was huge.
It's like when you say, I am literally dying right now. No, you're not. You're actually alive. You're not dying. You're figuratively dying right now.
But that definition has been in the dictionary for more than 100 years. So the fact that people were getting all outraged about it last week was hilarious to anyone who works in the usage field. We were all like, but it's been there for 100 years.
We're not making this up.
And it's marked, in the dictionaries and usage guides, it's marked to say, non-standard, and you shouldn't use it. But it's just so funny. Like, people, they're all upset. They think it's new.
That's the worst thing you can say. That's a non-standard usage. That's like saying, you are ignorant.
It kind of is, yeah.
You are ignorant. Where'd you go to school?
Non-standard.
I love it. So you and I have been in this business, this podcasting business, since practically the beginning. And we've seen a lot of changes. I mean, I still think back to Dawn and Drew. And, whatever happened to. And we're a couple of the survivors. And there are not a lot of us.
Yeah, well, it is a grind to do it all, every week, every year, every month. It's actual hard work. I think a lot of people started as hobby
for fun, we'll just do a show. It'll be fun,
and it becomes work when you're doing it for years. And
see, that's where I have an advantage because this has been my work since 1976. So, of course, it's work. I knew that. What, you didn't think it was work?
And I was a frealance writer, so I knew what it was like to, always have a new thing to crank out. But what's been fascinating to me is all the big corporations who've gotten into podcasting. Now ESPN and the Discovery Network, they all have their big podcasts. So, that's cool. It makes it harder for independent people to break in, but it also gives more visibility to podcasting as a medium. So,
I don't know if I'm as sanguine. How do you like that word? I'm not as sanguine about it as you are because I think the beauty of podcasting is its democratic foundation. The idea that anybody can do a show and that be equal with anybody else. That's what the internet was all about to me. Anybody could have a website. Anybody could have a blog. Anybody could do a show. And I hate people to think, oh, it's just an offshoot of Discovery or NPR. Oh yeah, they're just putting their shows on the radio. That's all it is. I mean, that's fine. You're right. It gives it some credibility. But to me, it's the wrong kind of credibility. So I'm glad when independents continue to do the shows and continue to succeed.
I think the most frustrating thing for me is having to compete with people who don't put ads in their podcasts because, it's for me, it's a business. It's my job. And it's all I do. I'm producing content and I need to get paid to do that. And, when someone like Discovery puts out a podcast and views it entirely as a marketing expense.
Right.
It makes it – people don't understand why this popular podcast doesn't have any ads. So why do you need to have ads?
Really? People still – give you a hard time about that, huh?
Yeah, not as much as they used to, but
I think they mostly.
I still hear it.
We do so many ads, people. Anybody who didn't like it is long gone. I guess maybe that's it.
Yeah, my show's shorter, so
that's a good point. You don't. Yeah, that's an interesting choice that you and I diverged on, and that's by the way the beauty of this medium is that anything goes. There's no rules. I came from a broadcast background where segments were 6 minutes long and the show was 44 minutes. And so for me, the idea of having a 2-hour show was, but you always embrace the shorter shows.
Yeah, the 5-minute quick tip. I mean, that's just, I thought it fit for, no one's going to listen to an hour-long show about grammar.
Oh, yeah. Nobody's gonna. Yes, they would, though. That's the funny thing, they would.
But that's true. Actually, Lexicon Valley has done quite well in their about 30 minutes. But, I wanted to impart one piece of information every week. And I actually found that I was personally listening to shorter shows because I don't commute. And so, you know, I listen here and there while I'm doing things. So I don't have those big chunks of time to listen to podcasts like people who commute do. So, you know, just like Grammar Pop, Grammar Girl was the kind of thing I would listen to. And that's why I made it. Right. And then it turned out other people liked it too.
It's completely, you know, we wouldn't get in an argument about that. In fact, it seems intuitive that shorter shows should do better. And so it's just, but that's the beauty. You do what makes sense to you. And that's why I love this. Now, I was on a campaign early on to get rid of this word podcast. Mm. I'm sure you supported me in my campaign.
No? I like the word podcast.
Damn it.
I'm sorry.
No, I was the only one. Netcast is such a better word, but okay, all right, I lost that war.
It is a better word, but yeah. It, you know, kind of like English doesn't have a gender neutral pronoun, you know?
Right.
And they're all, people have tried to put forth these other words and they just haven't caught on. And I just think podcast had too much of a hold.
Yes.
Before Netcast was introduced.
I agree. And I was the only guy introducing it, so it didn't really. So that's a good one. He, she, how do you say it? HS/HE? There is no word to do that gender neutral pronoun.
There isn't. And it bothers a lot of people when you say there.
I always say he. I hate there. I don't like there. So that's when you use, instead of using the singular pronoun, you're using the collective pronoun inappropriately.
Yeah. People think that. But then every usage guide says you shouldn't use he anymore because it's, you know, gender specific. It's sexist to use he.
It is. But then when you use she, people go, what? Huh? They sit up. They go, what? Are you talking about somebody specific?
Yeah. And you can almost always rewrite the sentence so that you can use they. You can just make the subject plural and then use they.
Right.
But
to do that, you would have to plan your sentences.
Speaking. It's much harder speaking than it is writing.
I get to the end of the sentence and no, there's nowhere to go. I can't rewind and say, let's make that a plural. And then I can say they or there. But I refuse to say that. Well, maybe not. Sometimes I might do that just because it does seem offensive to say he when you're not speaking about anybody in particular.
A lot of people don't even realize they do it. They do it and they'll say, oh, I hate it when people do that. But then it turns out they actually do it
too.
When they're speaking. They might not do it in writing.
Right.
But it's, yeah.
Yeah. What else? Commas. Harvard comma. Comma blunder. That was my favorite idea from Strunk and White.
Ah, yes. The comma blunder.
Too many commas.
Well, people argue about the Oxford comma.
Yes, I'm a Harvard comma man myself.
It's so funny. Like sometimes people try to call it the Harvard comma, but that's another one that hasn't really caught on. It's like only people from Harvard call it the Harvard comma.
I went
comma.
To Yale and I call it the Harvard comma. So
maybe it's an Ivy League thing.
You're talking, maybe we're just Ivy League solidarity. You're talking about a serial comma, the comma used, whether you use a comma or not before the and. So,
so red comma, white comma, and blue.
Right.
That last comma is called the Oxford comma or the serial comma.
Or
I guess
Harvard comma.
The Harvard comma, I guess, if you're from the Ivy League.
We won't say Oxford, darling. It's just not done. It has to be Harvard. Harvard. So are you you're an Oxonian?
I prefer the Oxford comma.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
It looks weird not to have that.
And it can cause more confusion to leave it out.
Eats, shoots, and leaves.
Yeah. Or, you know, my parents, the Pope and Jackie Kennedy, you know, like if you're thanking people, like without the comma, it could be quite embarrassing.
The Pope and Jackie Kennedy, what? See, grammar's fun. Do you miss the early days of podcasting? Or I mean, it's good that it's become a successful business for you. That's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually not all that different for me than it was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. It was the first year was really chaotic and different, but it really settled in after a year or two. And it's kind of the same for me. That's part of the reason I do the game. I do things like the game.
Right.
And I'm working on a trading card game, too, right now.
Are you?
Yeah.
For grammar?
Yeah, it's going to be called Peeve Wars, and I'm getting ready to do a Kickstarter. Do you know Len Peralta?
He's
a great artist. Yeah,
Love
he's
Len.
Doing the he's doing the art for it. And it's going to be called Peeve Wars. And as soon as Grammar Pop is sort of launched and settled in, we're going to do Peeve Wars Kickstarter. So we're really excited about that, too.
I will plug the hell out of it. So it's going to be a card game.
Yeah.
And, what
and the goal, get this, the goal is to annoy the other player to death.
So you figure out if there really drives them crazy, or literally, figuratively, it really drives them crazy, and they start using it all the time.
The different cards have different annoyance values. A game developer friend of mine, a board game and card game developer named Joe Kisenweather, is doing the gameplay aspect of it, and it's I've got the art from Lan and the gameplay from Joe, and it's turning out great.
Oh, you must have so much fun. This is great. It sounds like you're doing what you love.
Yeah, and I guess that, you know, the podcasting, it's the bread and butter, and it's every week, but I need to do these new things to keep myself interested and excited. Yeah. So games
Len, are... Len does, by the way, a really fun thing every Friday on our news show, Tech News Today. He illustrates it as we're doing the news stories. It is so fun.
I saw him tweet that last week, that you mentioned it.
Yeah. It's really awesome. A great idea. I'm sure Tom Merrick came up with that. It's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, Len's great. Len drew the original aardvark. Aardvark is a character I use in the Grammar Girl podcast in the example sentences, and Len drew the very first aardvark for
me. Neat. It's a small world.
It is.
That's what I like about it. What is your husband? He was a graduate student at UCSC. What is he? Is he an English guy too, or what is his?
No, he's a scientist, so he's actually, you know, not a very good writer, which I don't I don't care.
No, it's good. You should have a mix. It's good.
Yeah.
It's nice to be good at, you know, to kind of interlock your skills versus his skills. But if you have any science to do, you get him to do that.
Yeah. Occasionally he proofreads my stuff when I'm doing it at the last second. I'll be like, here, read this before I make it live.
does he do a science show? Does he on the quick and dirty tips?
No. He founded a biotech company, and now he's retired. He's retired. So he takes.
Oh, he's retired.
He does my books for me, and you know he takes care of our life.
Well. What did he sequence the frog? What did he do?
No, he his biotech company was working on cancer drugs and gene therapy,
exciting.
And he founded it in Santa Cruz, and then he left the company after he worked really hard. It felt like a lifetime, then he got bought out. So.
Do you ever correct people? You don't, probably, when you're talking to them. You don't, because you've got this reputation as Grammar Girl. That's the thing people are most afraid of. They're gonna shut up when you're not talking because you're Grammar Girl.
Oh, I never ever correct people. It seems so rude. I don't do it. And plus, people are already afraid enough when they're talking to me.
Exactly.
Most of the emails I get from people have some sort of blanket apology at the end for any grammar error that may be contained
herein.
I know
you're looking at everything I'm writing and judging me. You're judging me. It is always the case that when somebody sends a postcard complaining about my grammar or you did this wrong, invariably there'll be a misspelling or a grammatical error in the postcard.
Yeah. Well, you know that, years ago now, I was on the Oprah Winfrey Show because someone had written to Oprah to criticize her grammar and say, oh, Oprah's bad. Well, it turns out the person who wrote in was wrong.
Of course.
And they had me on the show to tell her she was wrong.
You were the Marshall McLuhan of Oprah. Well, I happen to have Grammar Girl right here. Let's see what she thinks, shall we?
Yes, pretty much.
How fun.
It was terrifying.
No, that's awesome. That's fantastic. Mignon, I'm so happy that you're doing so well and that quickanddirtytips.com, and now you've got the game, and soon you're going to have a card game. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And the books are great, too. These are all still in print. And you can go to quickanddirtytips.com to find out about everything that she does. But the Grammar Girl writing tips are fabulous. Everybody should get those. Look at all these books you've got here. That's great. Thank you. 101 misused words you'll never confuse again. Yeah, right. Sure.
I try to include little memory tricks whenever I can to help you remember.
Oh, good. The difference between affect and effect, purposely or purposefully. hilarious and hysterical. It feels like, I know why people are nervous with you, because it feels like there's a landmine field. You could just one misstep and you'll blow up. So easy to do. Mignon Fogarty, you're the greatest. So nice to see you again.
Thanks, Leo. It's always good to talk with you.
All righty. Take care. Her new app, it's out on the iPad, soon to be on Android. You must download it, especially if you have a kid. It's also available on the iPhone, Grammar Pop, and for the iPad, Grammar Pop HD. Wrinkled. Is that she wrinkled her nose? That's got to be a verb.
Whoops.
Oh. Thank you, Grammar Girl.
Thanks, Leo. It's not for the iPhone yet. It's just for the iPad.
Oh, just the iPad.
But I'm working on it.
Okay.
It'll be out soon.
Sorry. Hey, that was a good tip on the software that you use. That's really
Game Salad.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, because we were gonna do a, I wanted to do a, like a Farmville, but it would be Twit, and all the characters would be in it and stuff. And we talked to developers. It was like hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was like, well, I guess we're not doing that.
Exactly.
Maybe
yeah.
Not.
No. Look at Game Salad.
I'm gonna download it. Yeah.
Yeah. You could do it.
I bet I could. Write my own damn game. Thank you, Mignon. And when you ever get to the Bay Area, you must come up and see us.
I would love
to. You know what I'd like to do is get you and Len on when you get just plug your Kickstarter.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Thanks, Mignon. See you later.
Okay,
bye. What? Oh, let me end it. So show, do a shot of the game. Because I said wrinkled is a verb, and then I said...
Nope.
Oh. We do try... He's so good to... We do triangulation every Wednesday, right about 3:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. And now Math Girl will come on and tell me that 3:30... is plus 5 o'clock girl is 22:30 UTC on twit.tv. Please stop by and watch live, because the questions we get from the chat room really help me with the show, and I love it having a live chat room. But you know, we have on-demand audio and video available after the fact always at twit.tv/TRI for triangulation. Or, and this is a really cool pro tip, you could subscribe to the show in iTunes or one of the other podcatchers and get it every week just kind of automatically so you wouldn't miss an episode. Triangulation. Thanks to John Slanina, our board op, to the great Karsten Bondi, our producer, is putting together such a fun show. Next week, it's a very special triangulation. The folks from TriCaster are in town. We're going to talk to the guy who created the TriCaster, and then I guess I'm told a big reveal of something new from them. I don't know what it is. They haven't told me because I have no filter. And if they told me, I would tell you. So they just keep me in the dark. But we'll find out next Wednesday on Triangulation. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.